Okay, well, it's 6:02 here on Thursday night, July 15th. I'm going to call the Administrative Control Board meeting of the Mountain Water Regional Service District to order. Do we have any public input tonight? Doesn't sound like it. So we do need to go into executive session. Is there a motion?
I move that we go into executive session. Is there anything other than your contract?
Not that tonight.
Okay. Got a second.
Second.
That was Joel. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. We need a minute to... We're not going to switch the tape because it's just personnel.
Okay, tape's rolling, so I just need to know the motion to come out of executive and the second.
Because Ian made the motion and Tim was the second.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we had a good visit in executive session and have come out. Item three on our agenda tonight is consideration of a recommendation to the board for the general manager's contract.
Okay.
Is there a motion?
Yeah, so motion to ask for positive recommendation of the draft district general manager's contract per as discussed in executive session.
Second.
And that's to the county council.
To the county council. Yeah.
Okay, that was Ian and Joel.
Yes, sir.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. The fourth item is the consent agenda. We've got the minutes, the check register, and I didn't see any purchase orders in here.
No, nope, not tonight.
So were there any comments on the minutes? I read through them. I didn't make that meeting, but it looked like it was pretty productive and went pretty smooth.
Yeah, this is the first face-to-face one we had in a while.
Yeah, this is nice. Okay, so nothing on the minutes. Anything on the check register? I saw a couple of things.
I have a few things on the check register.
Karen, why don't you take us through those?
Please? Okay. First of all, I know that it's typical to refund people after, for their, their temporary meters, but it looks like we refunded Brandon Hunt $32,000, which was his impact and connection fees.
Yeah, I can take that. And Steve or Anna, you can chime in. He was a potential customer that paid impact fees and ultimately decided to use a well that he had on his property or drilled a well.
Okay.
So decided not to need service from the district. So.
Okay. And then there was a pretty substantial dryer repair, and I just wasn't sure if that was a clothes dryer or what kind of dryer.
So that's a compressed air dryer in one of our pump stations that operates pneumatic valves in the pump station, so the dryer went out, so it needed to be fixed.
It wasn't the Maytag.
Yeah. I was like, wow, that's an expensive dryer.
I don't have to answer that question.
$548,000.
Loan payoff.
That was
go ahead, Steve.
The loan was designed thing for the generators at Lost Canyon and the PO office down there at Park City. This was the one we did with Park City, so we paid the $548. Park City has paid us their 40, so we paid it all off. Park City has paid us their $181,000. That was their part of it.
Okay.
And that was already in the budget plan this year? That was a prepayment of debt that Steve went through over the last couple board meetings. We had funds available to do it. Park City had interest in participating in that, so that was the reason for it.
Okay.
And then I'm sorry, I must have had extra time to go through all these great detail. But What is the difference between the ER retirement contributions and the employer? Is one if the employee portion of your retirement contributions, and then the other is the employer part? And are those quarterly or monthly?
Those are good. So the one is the ER retirement contributions. That's what's required by URS, the Utah Retirement System, for either those who are participating in pension or the 401k through the state, the 403b with the state retirement plan. The ones that Fidelity, the 403 contributions, are the ones that MRW makes and that employees can put in their own money in that one if they would like. So it's two different with each table.
Well, no, there's
one
three.
One with the ER.
Yeah, it looked like there were three different ones. There's ER, there was the Fidelity, and then there was something called employer retirement contributions.
Steve, do you want to look into that and get back to it?
That was just spelled out, sort of abbreviated. It's the same. It's the same vendor, the Utah Retirement System. I think they had three payrolls that we had put the funds in for each of the payrolls.
13, 13.
But it's the same. Utah Retirement System, you know, the description
is slightly different on that. Okay.
All right.
That's it for me.
Well, if there's nothing else, are we ready to...
I had one question on there. Simplifile LLC, there's something that's called lien submission, and I think it's... I can barely read my own handwriting, recovery. Can you explain how that works? It's $42. Do we have like a... something that just automatically places liens and then some service?
You said Simplifile?
Yeah, it's on page three. Simply, is it Simplifile?
Yeah, I think so. I think
this is a service we use to put the lien with the county. So basically, Anna, if you want to maybe add more detail, but every sheet of lien is $20, and that way they submit electronically to the county, and so it's just easier to use them. So that's what that charge is, and it's often $42. Couple of pages of liens for the month.
So it isn't just for a single lien, it's for the totality of the liens, and we get a $42 charge for that, for this service?
And is that correct? Is it kind of like per sheet, right, or something like that?
Yeah, so Simplifile is a third-party provider we use to be able to record these electronically with the county.
But it's not just liens, right? It can be anything that we record?
It could be anything that we record, right? Their fee is the $2 portion. The $40 is the county. So Simplifile pays all of our fees to the county on our behalf, and we just cut a check to Simplifile instead of two separate fees to both parties.
I just don't recall seeing that description in the past. So is this the first time we've done this?
No, we've used them before.
Okay, I just...
I don't think it doesn't happen that often, so...
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
I had one on Hydro Specialties. I saw looked like we ordered some more Badger meters. For some reason, I thought we were...
Badger meters and endpoints, with all the new connections that they're having to install, and we're just still doing some swap out. We're still buying quite a few meters.
Okay, yeah, that helps, because I thought we bought all we needed, but now we have so many new customers coming on. Okay, that explains it. Yep. And then the PRV parts with Rocky Mountain Valve and Automation, which PRV was that? Did one go out, or is that a...
Super Vault was the last one that the ops guys were working on up in Summit Park.
Okay.
It was one of the last ones.
Okay.
It was a complete rebuild on that one.
Perfect. That's it for me.
Okay, if there's no other questions, we're ready for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay. Second.
That was Tim and Ian. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. Item five, we're going to consider approving the Pine Meadows annexation fee agreement.
Yeah, that's correct. So this has been in front of the board for discussion 2 months ago. Last month, the board saw a form of this agreement that the board approved to move forward with. I provided that version to Pine Meadows for their review. And there were two provisions that were added. This section 1C resulted from board discussion last month where we talked about an initial payment to kick this process off.
Is that like a retainer?
It's a similar idea. The way that we're going to handle it is I look at it as a good faith payment for us to get to work and start working with outside consultants and things like that.
So
and
it could get burned up in the first
year. We're going to burn it up. Yeah, we're going to burn it up.
Authority.
Correct.
Okay.
We're going to treat it as a credit.
Do you have any of the people or firms in mind aren't engaged?
Not engaged yet, but we're ready to launch into that as soon as this agreement gets signed.
So okay. The $25,000 is part of the $350,000?
Correct. Correct. And then the provision 1D is at the request of Pine Meadows. They had asked for almost like a stop-loss sort of clause where as soon as we're going to cross the threshold, they want to be notified and have the opportunity to provide authorization to proceed. The reality is they're going to be billed monthly anyway, so they should have an understanding where we're at. But I didn't have any heartburn with including that. So
that was my only question. Do you know where the $350 came from on their side?
We have socialized some numbers based on the community water process, which that amounted to about $500,000 in legal fees, engineering fees, et cetera.
Yep.
My communications with Eric from Pine Meadows are, we felt as though that was an appropriate place to start.
And have we...
$350. Okay.
For this...
That was your loss.
Yep. And then if we're going to go beyond that, we can provide a work plan on what we expect to spend and get authorization for some.
Yeah. Have we uncovered any surprises to date?
We haven't... This has been purely, administrative, working on this to this point. We haven't started any discovery work yet.
Scott, what were the circumstances of getting the money from drinking water on community water?
So that resulted from the engineering evaluation that was done on the community water system. We identified the deficiencies that they had, and then we worked with the Division of Drinking Water. We applied for a loan to cover all those deficiencies. As well as the
is that available, you think, here also?
Yes.
Potentially?
Yes.
Who would apply for the loan?
Mountain Regional would.
Because
we would carry it.
It would be ours.
Yeah, we have got the collateral.
Yeah.
So, when it's on this item 2, it says the district reserves the right to include all unpaid balances of the annexation administrative fee.
Yep.
In the infrastructure fee. So it would be kind of in these guys' interest to after the 25, stop paying us, and then all of those could go into the as an unpaid balance that we would pick up in the...
They could do it that way.
Would roll into the loan if they were cash poor.
It would. That's not our interest, right? We hope that they don't do that. But we put that in as a protection where if they were unable to pay the balance, that we could roll it into the loan and make sure that the district got paid back for it.
Because if they pay us with cash, can they claim that back to drinking water that has any kind of contribution and get...
It would just be a reduction in the total loan that we would go and ask for, and that loan is paid back by the residents of that system, right? So they pay for it one way or the other, whether they pay for it up front as cash or they pay for it on the back end as a loan.
And how many customers are there?
There's 800-ish lots.
So is that like 4,000 per customer?
For, say that again, Tim?
If you divide that 350 among all their customers, what is it per customer that
It's 4,000
four
$438.
$438.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, you're right.
Have any of the 810, have any of those people or entities or whatever you want to call them expressed any negativity whatsoever?
Not to my knowledge. Nobody's called our office and said, oh, no, we don't want you to do this.
We should probably stay out of that, too, though, shouldn't we, about whether they like it or don't like it? Because we're dealing at the management level of both companies. They've come to us.
Yeah.
It's probably good background information.
Yeah, okay,
whether they're paid $120.
There's a step in there where they have to have a vote internally.
Yes, that's correct, and that's something we'll have to work with Dave on, because the rules for approval in Pine Meadows rules and regs versus Mountain Regional's rules and regs are different. And I don't know which takes precedence.
Is there a point in time in this $350,000 study where you should get at least an initial read from the customers?
I'm trying to think through the process.
Some milestone there where you know enough where you can, because we don't know what they've told their own customers, right?
True. Yep.
They may have already got a poll, but wouldn't it make sense to try to find out just for our own sake whether we're trying to get this payment out of them or the majority of the folks in their organization don't support it?
Yeah, I think that's a good comment. As part of the process, we have to put together an annexation agreement, which includes, you know, various interests from both sides. And Dave, I can't remember if the public process portion, the public hearing, is at the time that the agreement is sort of initiated to move forward, or if that happens prior to closing of that agreement.
There is, part of the process is the petition. And then after that, there is a public hearing that's set. So the idea would be to have the public hearing. You have a protest period. If the protest period, you know, expires without adequate protest, obviously we should be working on an agreement. In the meantime, you're not going to enter into that agreement until after the protest.
Okay. So that's a good thing, right? So that protest period happens sooner in the process, Tim, which I think, you know, covers your concern.
Maybe get a read on where
we would recommend to the county council to annex, and then they would have the annexation hearing to, for that very reason, to make
sure.
Well,
it's just that in our organization, I'm not aware that we have some sort of polling mechanism within Mountain Regional, right?
No.
We don't go out and poll our customers to see what they want. Maybe it's a different type of company there.
Yeah. But so it is that.
I don't know if it's a different kind of company or it's just like five people that got together and said that they want to supply water to all these customers.
Yeah. So that's the point of the public hearing, right, is to provide a forum for them to do that. So I'll do a little more research on the nuts and bolts of the process and when we might expect to have that hearing and can get back with you.
So Scott, I used to have an editorial comment on, you know, as to sort of in the definitions of things.
Mm-hmm.
That, do you think it'd be helpful to say that the annexation administrative fee is really used to cover the work that's required to determine the annexation infrastructure fee? I mean, kind of inferred, but that's
part of it, right? I think it talks in here that it includes engineering, legal, and some other items. So you're absolutely right, Mike, that it does. The engineering evaluation is that engineering piece. But this would include
infrastructure fee.
Correct. This would include essentially all of the efforts involved from an administrative perspective, whether it be legal, engineering, staff workload, things of that nature.
But it all kind of goes to the infrastructure.
infrastructure fee, it seems like. But that's,
yeah, the infrastructure fee is the backstop for all of this.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to
Well, let me ask this question in a different way. And maybe you've answered this, or maybe you've answered it before. But, I mean, I really want to make sure that our exposure among regional water is minimal.
Yeah.
That's really a concern that I have.
Absolutely. That's the customers. That's.
Yeah, but is the language strong enough?
Is the language strong enough? I think the language is clear of what we're asking for, and I think the Mount Regional's exposure, I believe Mount Regional's exposure is minimal, because I believe at the end of the day, the annexation will occur, and whether they pay for this work in cash, as part of our process, or they pay for it on the back end in the infrastructure fee, we'll be fairly compensated for the work that's done.
Okay.
And for the exposure that we have.
Okay. I may have interrupted you, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. That's
our second version, right? Yeah. We didn't even have one of these. We're trying to, you know, incorporate what we learned.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's focused on exposure.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of interesting where it says this 1A says Pine Mills Water Company will pay the invoice within 30 days. But if they don't, then do we stop? Is the contract void?
You would have the ability to ask them to cure it. They don't cure it, yeah.
They're in breach.
Yeah, you stop.
So it could. The question is, should we?
That's a lot of cash for the little water company to have one.
So Tim's exactly right. Is if that happens, then I will come to you and we'll have that discussion of the payments have stopped. Back to the district's charter, right, Mike? You know, do we continue or do we stop?
Well, right now, if there's some reliability factor on the 1 to 5, and let's say the Mountain Regional is at a 5, where are they at? To an individual customer, I mean, are they pretty certain that for the next couple of years, every time they turn their faucet on, the water's going to run out of it?
We provide the backstop for them, so yes.
We do.
Yeah. Okay. We are currently providing, support
to the top of the hill. And,
yep.
Yep.
Yep. We're currently providing them supplemental water to meet their demands.
So are we ready for a motion to approve the agreement?
And this is to the county council as well? Or just
no, this is just between, I'll sign it, and Eric Silva from Pine Meadows will sign it as well. So this will go back to Pine Meadows. It'll be in front of their board or their leadership council, and they will consider approving it. If they do, Eric and I will sign it, and I'll start making phone calls.
Okay. So, motion for approval of the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company annexation fee agreement.
Is there a second?
Second.
That was Karen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. Item 6. Okay.
So, item 6, once again, the board has seen this before, right? This was the drought response plan that we put together and presented in April. Since that time, we have had a number of work sessions internally, which led to red lines. Ian provided a number of red line comments from the board. All of those red lines have been incorporated. No material changes to the intent of the document or to the core nuts and bolts of the document. A lot of just cleanup, clarification type adjustments. So,
should we go for a motion?
Yeah.
Well, I have a question on just on the. There's a lot of folks in there that have to be contacted, and it looks like it's probably the right folks being contacted in the right circumstances. Do those people know that they're part of this plan and could get contacted?
think you're talking about the next agenda item. Are you talking about the wildfire checklist?
Oh, the wildfire. It will hold up to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that's okay. This is just red lines on that drought response plan. Okay. I don't need formal approval from the board. It's more, the board agrees with the adoption of this document. I'm going to put it on our website. We've done our initial due diligence, and we have a plan if we need it.
It's a headline.
Yeah.
I made a call on just the hell of it.
Uh-huh.
I called the Blackhawk Station.
Yeah.
And I called Jackie Walker, and pardon my language. She taking her sweet-ass time shutting off the water to some of the common areas. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting really, pardon my language, I'm getting really pissed off. I mean, make a goddamn call. Tell them to shut the water off. You don't need to water my front yard. You don't need to water the common areas. I don't give a rat's ass about the flowers. And they'll come back eventually. But I'm just griping and bitching so you know that, I mean, not to rat on them. But they're taking their sweet time. And
so you made a call to your HOA, Joel, and asked them?
Yeah, I said, Jackie, look, I identify myself.
Yeah.
And I said, there's no need to water the dead clover at 11 o'clock in the morning, and there's no need to water common areas.
Yeah.
Now, my point is, if Blackhawk Station is out of whack,
yeah,
what other HOAs are out of whack? That's my point. It's not Blackhawk Station.
Yeah, no, I want you to think that. So we're in the process, Anna and Lisa are in the process of reaching out to HOAs.
I mean, maybe you carry more weight. Maybe you're more bored.
We'll see.
I don't mean to be negative, but shut the goddamn water off. I mean, we don't need it. And it's a waste, especially at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay. Any other comments on the drought response plan?
All I noticed is on page 22,
it
refers back to an exception earlier in the document, but then it doesn't have like the reference in it. So
good catch.
That should just be cleaned up before. But no, I thought it was fantastic. It was well written. It was really.
Well, does it have page numbers?
Mine
doesn't.
It was on page 22, Karen.
Yeah, it was on page 22 where it was talking about exception.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
It says like the fourth
section. It's probably because I deleted that section and it was a cross reference in the document that then went to error at zero. So
yeah.
I'll check that out.
Okay. Let me get the page that was happening here. Are we being, there's a sub right there. Are we being for the first offense, second offense, third offense, fourth offense, are we being strict enough? Are we being tough enough?
Those were increased above the initial draft. The initial draft was warning for the first, $100 for the second, and $500 for the third, and we moved it to warning, $150 for the second, and $1,000 for the third.
I just had a simple question to make sure.
I think it's proof will be in the pudding. We'll see what happens.
We can adjust it.
Yeah.
So
you
can, the fourth offense,
you don't
need
our permission or consent to do that. Do that's almost like a rate deal, though.
Yeah. So that's a good point, Mike. So there is board approval that's required.
I think about people that haven't turned the Christmas lights off. Those guys are totally going to lose their mind.
Board approval is required to move into these actions at the start of the spring. So we can work with Dave on that, but I think the motion might include the increase in the rates for, or the penalties for non-compliance.
Because would those best be established in the
They're rate? Currently in our fee structure.
In the fee structure,
yeah.
And so does this match that, or is this is amending that?
This would amend that.
Okay. And do we know how we compare to other cities that are in a similar situation?
I don't, Joel.
Okay.
I'm not sure if any other drought response plans locally, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
Okay, well, I think we're ready for a motion.
Or do you have a comment on these funds?
Yeah, the comment I would have is that everything's fine until we get to the penalty section. When we're going to change the penalties in our fee schedule, we're required to have a public hearing before we change those.
Okay.
Everything else is fine.
Should we leave them then?
Yeah.
Until we do the next rate.
Bob, we also have to have the public hearing if we're going to increase to the drought rates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the same time this week.
So
are the drought rates in this?
Yeah, there's examples
there of the drought rates.
So I think the reality is, and maybe this isn't captured from an authority perspective, but the reality is in April, or if changes are made through the summer, I'm going to come to the board and say, we need to move into our drought response level 4. That's going to include the recommended surcharges, the recommended fine structure, and we'll have to have a public hearing to be able for the board to approve that and take public comment.
So what does this present those rates? I didn't see those.
Example surcharges are provided.
They're just examples.
They're just examples.
Okay.
So it's going to depend on the district budget for that year, and yeah. You know, it's a model that Steve put together as a starting point.
So on this, in item 6, on the, can you go to that page, please? There. Okay, so are these annual or monthly or?
It's annual, is really what it is.
Okay.
They're annual reduction targets for the amount of water used in those categories.
Okay, that might help to identify them as such.
Need a 0 in front of the 0.9 in the last row.
It might be different because it's where you can't see.
That's a good problem.
I caught the other ones and I can't tell if it's,
And then does it have page numbers, Scott? The document.
Chris, can you see it?
I don't think it does.
Okay. Page numbers and anything else?
Can I ask just a question so far? This might be a Scott question, but if you go down and it says, you know, your public outreach campaign will get you from 5 to 20%, are we seeing any?
We're not seeing
significant?
That. No. No. Usage is up.
I was going to ask about that financial report. Yeah, you clearly said everybody was
per
not.
Unit basis?
On a per unit basis.
It is.
Yes.
All right, so then let's finish this. Do we have any other comments here?
So to get back to the whole, like, we need to go through the rate hearing before the rates go into effect. I can't remember, Scott, but wasn't that spelled out at the beginning that this was a document that if we go into drought conditions, then it goes into effect?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So I think we're covered the way it's written.
Okay.
That so if it goes into effect, then we need to have a rate hearing.
So I can double check that. That's the intent. The intent is that board action is required to go into this response.
Yeah.
And I think those board actions will be evaluated at that time. We'll work with Dave and make sure we do the process right.
Yeah. Maybe just make sure that's in there before we post it.
Well, that's kind of this paragraph 2. Mm-hmm. Is we're going to, the GM can give us this recommendation in April. But it may be really valuable right there to say exactly what you're saying.
Portion of that, the hearing.
If we go into this mode, in order to implement the draw rates, we'll have to, or the potential penalties, we'll have to go through the public hearing and the rate increase process.
Protects us a little bit that we're following the process. We're not stepping outside and just making rates arbitrary.
Okay, so we're going to add a discussion on how to change the rates.
Yeah, so I can do that. I can make all these. I'll accept all the red lines today. I'll add these additional adjustments in. We'll adopt it as a district document. Get it on the website.
On that penalty that you had there, what's the cycle for that? Is that like every time a bill comes out, or do you get the badger meters hooked up and... It's going to be
watering.
On this day, if you're doing this much, on the second day, you're going to go to level two, and on the third day, you're going to have your water turned off, or is it going to be one of these things where you have to see how much they're using for a month, and maybe by the time August or September rolls around, you're going to get into that period where they're going to have to turn the water off if they've ignored it in June,
they
could July.
Be watering on an odd day and they're having easement house, you could get a warning.
So that's a good question. It's not defined, and it's one of the challenges that we're starting to work through now, currently, with respect to one of the things I'll talk about is we are ratcheting up our enforcement of both frequency of watering and also wasting of water through the leak detection systems, through our meters. And we're prioritizing those from the largest offenders down, and we are starting to work through what is an appropriate frequency. I don't have a
By the time you get to where you're charging someone a gram, and then you're talking about turning your water off, you better have a pretty clear written down system that shows that they violated and that they knew that they were violated.
Yeah.
Which is tough, right? You knew you were violated and you did it anyway?
Yeah.
Okay, it's pretty... I think the penalties are appropriate, but anyone that has to get to that point, they're going to be coming back and arguing and saying, how did I know that this is what was going on?
Let me follow up. Dave, is there any precedent that's been set that you know as far as first event, second, third, and fourth, or anything else? I mean, would this hold up in a court of law? I mean, I know people can sue on the drop of a dime. I did a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, there are no specific guidelines for this in state statute. It's up to each individual jurisdiction to set it. And generally speaking, you may have somebody appeal their fine to the Administrative Control Board, and you can moderate if you want to.
And that's part of the exception process that I put in here is they would follow the district's appeal process for our rules and regs.
Okay. I just want to answer a question. So you could think this through a little bit more. I think we should be as tough as possible. But by the same token, there are many circumstances. I understand all that.
My message to the staff so far has been our goal is not to be shutting everybody's water off. Our goal is to drive usage down.
Right.
And so
we
are feeling this process out. Letters have gone out. We've had a number of people call us saying, hey, I got this violation letter for a leak. I'm working on it. So we're evaluating these customers that are working with us and driving those numbers down and working to solve the problem, or are they customers that are just blatantly ignoring us?
Well, if you go by the numbers, you take a look at the third offense on there. We're in a drought year. You know how much 5% of our customers are, right?
Yeah.
You could be 5% of our customers getting to the third offense. How many is that?
It's 200? 250.
Yeah. So you're going to have 250 third level offenses that you're going to have to be dealing with in a month.
But if you collect all that money, then you get $250,000 to pay for.
Well, I was saying that. I was saying that for Dave's benefit when he walked out. Because every one of them would be contested.
Really should be 13 or 14.
And I don't know that 5% would actually get to that level in any 1 month.
So that's been one of the topics of conversation that you have in the council work session is enforcement. Where does the staff come from to enforce, whether it's internal, not regional, or it's at the county level, right? I mean,
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And that's a 5%. It's not unreasonable to think it could be 10 to 20% of customers.
Yeah.
No, it's gonna be a lot.
And I use the third level there because it's $150, you know, that our customers here, 1,000 out of principle.
Okay, so I think we're all right with adopting this response plan with the red lines and the comments you had, Tom.
Okay.
Do we have anything else on 6?
Did you get the section 1?
I got it. Yeah. Double check section numbers.
Okay. Are we ready to go to item 7?
Do we need to make a motion?
There's no motion.
No, we just think it's good.
Yeah.
GM comments.
Okay, you've got the floor on general manager comments.
Yeah, so to answer, Tim had a question about, do all these people know that they're on this sheet? The answer is no, but we have personal relationships with everybody on this form, so.
Yeah, there was a lot of people on there, and I've been through one of these things before where we put in fiber optics in the state of California, and we had this big archaeological response plan.
Yeah.
Where if we dug up bones somewhere, didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And the first time we got on the phone and called up the county coroner, and they said, well, if those bones don't have tennis shoes on them, we're not coming out there to take a look at them. So if you can put all these, you can put all these names and numbers on there, but if they're not expecting a call, they can just cripple the whole process.
Yeah. That's a good comment. For those listening, right, we're in agenda item 7A, wildfire response and impact mitigation checklist. That's a good point, Tim. The reason that I didn't try to write some elaborate plan around all this is because there's too many cases, and I don't, you know, the response is going to be dictated by the situation. All I wanted to do was try to capture some of the...
Well, you haven't said what they're supposed to do, which is good.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to capture, you know, in the event of a wildfire, what are some of the core steps we need to take, and who are the people you got to call?
Yeah. What was the spine flow reduction in spine road?
Yeah, that was my exact question.
Sorry.
Is that the road, is that the spine road that comes through Promontory from the treatment plant?
Yeah, so that's water coming from our treatment plant down to the rest of the district. We've got a control valve that handles how much flow comes down the hill. And in the event we can't pump water out from Rockport, we're going to have to scale that flow down so that we don't deplete the tank at the treatment plant.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, you could probably just clarify that text. That seems easy.
Internally, we know what that means.
Yeah. Right? And then it seems like the document, it's a good draft, but it seems like it's really reactive. Is there anything we can proactively do? I mean, you've mentioned some of the things you're doing with outreach on, you know, fire mitigation measures. But is there anything else we can do? Like, if an area does burn and you contact some of those people on the plan, and they tell you that, yes, there is a debris flow risk in this drainage, do we hire people to go out and put hay bales up and try to, like, mitigate poor water quality getting into the stream? Is there anything else we can do?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Okay. I
didn't think of it like that.
But I think... Because that would be my only comment. Yeah. Is I think you have things you've already done that come across to me as very reactive.
Yeah.
And that highlights a lot of good work that's been done. So I think you can put a couple of those pieces in there and maybe find some others.
Okay. Because I don't, to be honest, I don't know what those options are, but I'll think about that.
Okay. But you've done a couple of them already. I think the outreach you're doing on fire mitigation and the upper drainages, I think that's really good work. And it sounds like that's going to be a progressive thing over several years.
Yeah. And I expect, you know, grant funding coming in year over year to be able to do some of that work. So that is a proactive piece. But as far as can we be proactive, in the moment, basically, yeah. Right? I have not thought about that piece.
Okay.
So,
cool.
Have we thought about the future? I mean, I'm more concerned about next year. And we don't, you know, I agree with what you're saying. We should be proactive. We should be positive. But we should offer, you know, how to make things better. But I also think we need to think long term, and I guess I don't see that there. Maybe I'm missing something.
Well, I think that's where some of the work that Ian's talking about comes in. So we've been part of a larger stakeholder group with Summit County, the Forest Service, the State Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands, Utah State University. We're trying to do all this.
But you're doing brush clearing and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, the idea is identify the high priority areas to treat, identify the appropriate treatment for that area. It might be prescribed burn, maybe, you know, thinning the amount of fuels up there. And then to do that work proactively to decrease the risk of catastrophic wildfire.
Yeah.
Right? So that we are actively working on that. Summit County just hired a public lands coordinator who's going to be the project manager on this. We submitted for grant funding in June, about 3 weeks ago. We've been in contact with other grant avenues, if you will, that are going to come at the end of the year. We're expecting to get, you know, funding. You know, I'd be comfortable to say we're applying for funding on the order of hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to support these efforts.
Maybe you should stick infrastructure in the title somewhere.
Yep, good idea.
There's a lot of money coming for infrastructure.
Well, that's a good angle.
This is
okay. So then,
did the county hire
the council on how to strategies be?
Did you have a question, Ian?
Minor question. Did the county hire that land person?
They did. All right, item 7B, update on the June 30th work session with the council. So this was a work session that Pat Putt helped to spearhead ahead. So county planning staff, I attended it, and some folks from the east side of the county attended and had comment, generally trying to wrap their arms around whether or not countywide water restrictions should go into place, and just a general work session on other topics such as water collaboration amongst the many water providers in the county, potentially looking at future code changes for landscaping code in the county's development code. And I just wanted to share some of my takeaways from that. These weren't directives, they were just my takeaways from the conversation. Generally, it appeared to be the council's position that water restrictions should be implemented and enforced by the respective water provider, that they did not intend to handle that at the county government level. So as a result of that, and we had already been moving in this direction, we stepped up our enforcement of, like I mentioned earlier, the people that were not being compliant with the frequency of watering, as well as wasting of water, we primarily know that through the leak detection system in our meters. So we're actively sending those warning letters out. Another takeaway for me was priority should really be placed on education and incentives over enforcement. The district throughout this summer has been working diligently on the education piece through newsletters, sending out information on our bills, social media, targeted communication with specific customers. To your question earlier, Karen, we're not seeing a lot of, it hasn't been very effective based on the amount of water people are using. With respect to incentives, I have asked Steve to start working on some financial modeling. I think we ought to consider raising the rate of the upper tiers of our rate structure, those high volume tiers. And I think we ought to take that money and create lawn or turf removal incentive programs and other conservation programs. That was one of the things from council was the message was clear that they wanted to see, or they supported more punitive rates for the excessive use, and they supported more incentives to try to get water use down with respect to the individual homeowners and things like that. So,
talk about a landscaping ordinance?
Yep, they talked about that as well. That's going to be my last takeaway.
I mean, if there's some target for that additional revenue, I don't think we should call it punitive anymore. No.
It's just a
change in the rate, because if we're calling them punitive, we're telling them we don't really want to do that, but it sounds like we do, because we're going to use that money for sod removal and stuff, so.
That's a fair statement.
I think Karen's comment is spot on. It's a conservation rate.
Yeah, it is, and you know.
Right.
Punitive was not the right word to use there, but generally my feeling is we're gonna get far more progress, improvement, reduction in water usage by providing incentives to the people who care, as opposed to trying to change the habits of the people who are excessive users. So increase those rates, create a conservation program, which includes incentives, marketing, etc. We're talking about hiring a conservation coordinator to go forward here into 2022, and I think this is a great way to do it.
Do we have a way of showing us that it's actually costing the district more for them using more water?
Well, they're overusing their equivalent residential connection amount.
No,
right?
it's conservation based.
Do we have something where it shows that we're actually being damaged by them using more water?
No.
Yes, absolutely. Let's just say the average person is supposed to get, you know, an ERC of, you know, 0.67, yeah, and they consistently use more than that, then only so many houses can be built because the average person uses a higher than.
But for years we've enjoyed increased revenue because of people using more water. It certainly hasn't been punitive to us or anything, and we've enjoyed getting that money. But now, because it's looking like there's a general shortage of water, we're making the argument that somehow Mountain Regional is being damaged by them using more water. And I'm not sure that we are.
I'm not trying to make that statement. It's more that
it's to encourage conservation.
It's to encourage conservation, and this is a tool to be able to do it. Is the way I see it.
So I'm going to defer to Dave on that. I mean, if someone's going to make an argument against this where they're having to pay more and they want to, you know, file some sort of claim or whatever, they're going to have to ask us, show us that you've been damaged, that we're paying more money on this because you're basically charging us more money.
Rates, there's a that they don't have to be dollar based, right? They can include a conservation
They can. And generally, in terms of penalty, courts just look and say whether or not it's reasonable, and that can be very subjective.
I think a court would have a hard time saying it's not reasonable in the current conditions.
Yeah.
And also what we're doing is, as part of Steve's efforts, he's comparing our upper tier costs against the other water utilities locally, and there is opportunity for us to create this program.
Good.
So I think that we'll be able to show that we are being consistent with some of the other water providers locally. So that may support the reasonable argument.
mean, the other side of it is, if anything, it's the more water we provide, the unit cost will go down. Right? So it's... Okay, so that's good. Anything else?
Could Steve share that assessment with us when he's done?
Yes, so what we're going to do is it's going to be part of our September board meeting when we're talking, it's the first budget discussion. Lisa plans on, talking about this program, which will include all of Steve's financial modeling. So we're actively working on it.
Go, Steve, go.
Tonight was just a shot across the bow. You can expect to see it in a couple months.
Okay. Awesome.
The last takeaway, Mike, that you hit was there was a lot of support for the county to review the development code, both on the Snuggerville Basin Planning Development Code as well as the Eastern Summit County Development Code, to put in or consider putting in tighter landscaping requirements specific to turf. Layton, I just read an article last week, I believe it was, that Layton just adopted much tougher landscaping requirements with respect to how much turf on a given parcel. So that's the type of idea that Pat Putt and his team are going to start working on.
You know,
we're going to work directly with him on that.
What's interesting is the DRC Design Review Committee for Sewer Creek has asked me to ask a question of Pat Putt about AstroTurf, and they use it generically, AstroTurf, because we don't have a lot of grass, we have grass, but we want to even be more stringent, and if this takes effect, I think it's going to have wide ranging impact on you. I'll say you.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that we'll decrease water use and use more quote AstroTurf.
Okay, that sounds great.
So I'll keep you guys abreast of what's going on.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. So those were the main takeaways from that work session. Any questions on those? No? Okay.
It's good work.
What's up next? Other for me, I've got a couple things here. Usage update. I'll start with the production side of things, which is a really positive story. Our production is down 4% compared to last year. And as I mentioned before, usage is up. So that's kudos to Brian and his whole team, really. There's some other variables in there, but glaring to me is water loss efforts have been fruitful. I mean, if we're producing less water yet selling more, that tells me that water losses are down, which has been excellent. Steve, do you just want to touch on, I think, just the residential and the large residential categories and the work that you just put together today, I believe it was. Can you just touch on that?
You bet. So when we look at June usage from 2020 to 2021, for residential homes, so these are homes that are 3,000 square feet or smaller, we had a growth of just over 3% in the number of those customers, and we also had usage growth of about 3%. So basically, our residential customers used almost the exact same amount of water this June as they did last June. So no conservation, but no increase. When we looked at large residential customers, they had about a little over 4% growth in number of customers, but the usage was almost a 13% growth in them. So it netted out to about an 8% growth. So each large residential customer is using about 8% more water than they did last year. So that was a little, disheartening. There may be some other factors, a lot of new large residential homes trying to get landscape in and keep it alive and things like that. But we did see, although our residential customers stayed flat on their usage, our large residential customers, there was an uptick actually in usage this June versus last June.
So that's what I mean when I say that, usage appears to have gone up in June.
We're looking at the financials, yeah. I wasn't sure if we just had a lot more new customers, and that's why we were
Yeah. So what I've been talking to Steve about is it's the large residential neighborhoods that I believe we're seeing the most growth in. Promontory, the Colony, these big neighborhoods. You know, and as Steve said, a lot of them are trying to establish landscaping, and that's maybe one reason that we're seeing that. But it's unfortunate. So that's my usage update. Generally, I just wanted to make a comment from a source production standpoint. Our treatment plant is approaching 3 million gallons a day, which is pretty close to the peak that we saw last year. Our peak day is typically middle of July. So when Chris provides the source production report at the end of the month, I'll have that number to share next month. Groundwater levels so far appear to be behaving normally. We don't see any significant anomalies in their behavior, which again is good news. Brian's been working really hard on massaging the production rates and the run times, trying his best to try to keep the stress down on our groundwater sources. And the last other item that I had, Chris reminded me to remind the board or let the board know, we had that customer last year that we had some challenges with getting their new meter installed. I'm sure you remember that.
In the patio.
Yep, that meter was installed successfully probably 2 months ago. They were super nice to the guys that came out and did it, and so that issue has been resolved. So, yeah, awesome. And that's it for me. Are there any comments or questions for me?
The last meeting we talked about chasing down any kind of protocols in the event that you have another computer issue like you did last time.
Yeah.
About who makes the call, what is the procedure. Did you find anything out about that?
I did not. I'll make a note of that and I'll follow up.
Because I think it's something that you might have to do over a weekend sometime.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So actually, I had a meeting with CISA yesterday, a local representative out of Salt Lake, and CISA is the cyber group, basically, of the mm-hmm. Homeland Security. And they have started publishing some helpful guidelines, if you will. And so after talking to him yesterday, that they're sort of becoming a clearinghouse for that kind of stuff from a federal standpoint.
Yeah, I think where we were heading at there is that if it happened at 2 a.m. on Saturday morning and you had a 24-hour time frame, you know what to do.
Right. And with Dave being here, I'll ask him the question. So, Dave, the question is, in the event of a future ransomware attack where we are in a position where we need to make a payment to either protect public health or, you know...
Which was not the case this time.
Was not the case this time, that's correct. Or to mitigate, you know, excessive damages to the district. Who has the authority to make that call? Do I?
Decision.
Yeah. To make that decision, you know, to provide payment, you know, to be able to...
Per the instructions that you got on the email.
I think it's you.
Yeah. But the question is, do I need board approval or council approval? That's Tim's concern, right, is that we get into this situation, we have a public health concern, and I don't have the authority to make the decision. If that's the case, we want to visit this now and ensure that I do have the authority.
So you don't have to tell him. I can't.
Yeah.
You got to wait until...
Sorry, but we have to wait until the next council.
I lost that. I've got to tell my
name. You should know how much they're going to spend.
Okay.
But we need to know that, though.
Yeah, it's financial limit?
Yeah, it's over the financial limit. You may need board approval, but it could be...
Probably going to be.
It's probably you do the best you can under the circumstances. It may be that you're just calling each of them individually, and then you're ratifying it after the fact.
Okay. Because I don't know if a financial limit's defined. I think that's part of this question as well.
Yeah,
would something like this kick in that?
You have a signatory.
Well, up to $100,000, yeah. That's what you need.
That is a cut.
Okay, so.
But wouldn't something like this kick in the county, like, emergency response structure? Like a threat to public health? Isn't that.
And
they're going through the sheriff?
Probably not.
Oh, darn it.
So, again, I think, one, you can probably do it up to 100,000. Then you need some kind of approval from the board. It could be after the fact ratification.
Okay.
I mean, the biggest thing is that if you're going to pay it, make sure it's been reported to the FBI.
Yeah.
Because the FBI, in this age of the NSA knowing everything, the FBI has been known to be able to get back the money within, you know, 30 days. I mean, everybody saw the pipeline and everything. Yeah, they got all the money back.
Yep. Well, I think in the circumstance we had here, I think we should have something at least understood or written down, because they were looking for payment in cryptocurrency, and we don't have a cryptocurrency account here. That means we'd have to liquidate something, we'd have to go in, create a cryptocurrency amount, and then pay from that. And I don't know if that's something that could be done very quickly, or should we start one of those accounts?
Well, there's IRS issues. I mean, basically that's securities now. Yeah.
So I spoke with the general manager at one of the large wastewater districts about what do they do. And they have a consultant that comes in, and he tests their firewalls. Mm-hmm. They leave flash drives laying in the parking lot and hoping somebody will pick it up and put it in a computer. And he wouldn't tell me very much, because it's proprietary.
Yeah, that stuff's pretty standard.
And do we have a service like that? Do we use anybody?
Just make sure your big toaster shows up. Don't plug it in. Okay.
And they'll put something racy on it,
Toaster, refrigerator.
So there's also free services through the federal government that'll do some of the same probing and so forth.
Yeah.
That's at no cost to the district as well. We're looking at all that stuff currently.
Yeah. Chris, but then you also
have the process of getting proposals for some of the type of work that you talked
from
about.
From a third-party consultant or something.
Yes. I think the topic we're talking about here is slightly different from that. I think all that needs to get done. Let's say that we have it all in place. We understand what's going on. But still, there's going to be an email that shows up. Yes. And someone's got to act.
How do we do it?
Yeah, right. We need a structure and a lot of response. And all those things, reporting the FBI, we would absolutely do that, Dave. But in some cases, they may not be available until after we're in a position where we have to pay. If it happens on a Saturday morning,
it's a standard operating procedure we need to develop.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Anything else for me?
No. The groundwater piece you're talking about, is that kind of strategic on your part? Try to not stress the groundwater systems as much as possible this year? Because if we get asked for a reduction in surface water next year, we've got our groundwater.
Just in general, I'm trying to protect the groundwater as best we can. I've got, you've heard me talk about a water right exchange application that's waiting on a decision any day. We are absolutely prioritizing surface water to the extent possible. Whether or not surface water gets cut in the future, or just to provide for better sustainability of the groundwater itself.
Has there been any more thought on potentially trying to get non-Weber Basin water rights?
I think it's a great suggestion that you've had in the past. I haven't made any traction or progress.
It just seems like we've got talks about we've got extra money right now, and I mean, right now is not the best time to buy water.
Yeah.
Prices are going to be high. But we're about to be in a position where we're very heavy in Weber Basin. Anything we have to offset that would help us potentially. So.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're absolutely right.
Are there wells in Promontory, or is that all get served by?
There's two. There's one very close to Karen's house. That's our largest producer. There's 3 mile well up at the top. Yeah, and what else?
Is there a mechanism to serve up there if we took nothing from the Weber River?
Serve Promontory?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
So Promontory. We got 1,000 acre feet out of those 2 wells last year, didn't we?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And we have the ability to pump the water from the well near Karen's house up to the top of Promontory.
Okay.
So. That's why I bought that.
You just tap
in. Apocalypse somewhere.
Tap in.
If there's no more questions for me, Steve, take it away. You're up with agenda number 8. Financial management update. We still have you, Steve?
Yeah, sorry. Am I showing on a screen there, I'm thinking, now?
Yeah. I'm trying to grab you. Hang on.
It is kind of hard hearing all the conversations from back of the office, I have to admit. So
we can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. So if you have a question, you'll have to really speak up.
All right, that sounds great, Steve. Thanks for the heads up.
Okay. Is my screen up then okay for everybody?
Yeah, you're good.
All right, so through June, our net income is $2.61 million for the year. That's $1.99 million better than projected. And let's round that to $2 million. Of that $2 million, $1.8 comes from higher revenues than expected, and about $200,000 from expenses that are lower than what are anticipated. The pattern that we've seen that I've explained before is that it's really the development-related collections that are so high. For example, through June, we have $1.1 million in impact fees. Budget was only to be at $269,000. Meter connection revenue is almost $500,000, and it was budgeted to be $136,000. We'll talk about those growth numbers here in just a minute. So the lion's share of the variance from budget comes from those development-related collections. Retail water sales are a little higher than planned, $348,000 over budget, but not what's causing our big variance. On this page, again, I've highlighted that development-related collections. We're at 2.2 nearly there. Budget was $800,000, so we're $1.36 million better than budgeted, and we're $1.4 million higher than last year. It is just crazy, the revolving door we have downstairs right now for Anna taking impact fees and applications and things like that. So other revenues and things like that are really maintaining kind of what we expected. As we kind of alluded to, June water sales were higher than were budgeted, and June usage this year, or revenue bill usage, was higher this year than last year. So we did have a positive variance on June revenue compared to budget. On the expense side, we're doing really well. We are, about $200,000 below planned expenses. We're seeing savings in basically across the board. Every department is a little bit below budget, and that's why we're being able to have that $200,000 overall low on expenses. So that's a good trend, and we'll hope to keep that up through the year. Cash, we're in a strong position, obviously, because of all these collections. We're at 346 days cash reserves on hand compared to 273 last year. So no concern there. And as we need to fund maybe some of these things we've been talking about, draft contingency funds, and other things, we are in good shape to do that.
Steve, what is the, can you do a quick calculation on there? What is 346 days compared to 120 days? What is that in dollars?
Let's see.
It's about.
So dollar, so a year is roughly $7.7 million because that's our cash budget for the year. So a third of that is roughly what? Sorry.
1.9.
7.7, 9.33, so about $2.5 million.
Okay, thanks.
For would be 120 days. So We haven't been at 120 days for a long time. But like last year, as you see, we were at 273, so we are running pretty high there.
So we've got, instead of needing 2.5
That might help us be able to fund our office, or at least be able to pay for some of it and not have to borrow.
And our policy says if we go above 365 days, we need to reallocate some of that money to other uses, correct, Steve?
That's correct. But we don't have to do that during the year because we understand you'll have cash spikes for collections and maybe delayed expenses. It's just as we hit the budget cycle at the end of the year, if we're going to be above that, then we do have to allocate those funds to specific use we're going to use them for.
Well, the only reason I was asking that is because that number between 346 and 120 is different every year. It's not the same number every year. And so it's a bigger amount now because it's a bigger organization because it takes more money to run it there.
Yeah, because it grows every year as our budget grows. So the amount of cash we have to have on hand to meet 120 days is not constant. You're right, Tim, it does grow every year, assuming our expenses are growing every year.
Steve, did we fund?
In June, we did make our the mid-year interest payments on all our calls.
Hey, Steve, we got a question for Mike.
Hey, did we fund that drought reserve fund?
No, we will do that at the end of the year as part of our budget cycle.
That could be part of the cash.
We haven't funded that yet.
Thank you.
And then we'll set up its own reserve that will show as a separate line item once we do that.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
You bet. Going to jump down here to customer growth. Real quick, just to highlight how crazy this year is. So usually at this point in the year, or the last 4 years, we would have had 56 customers come in and pay their meter connection and impact fee and say, hey, I want to be a customer. So far this year, we're at 239. So we're more than 4 times our normal customer growth. You'll see that we're at 1.1 million in impact fees. Usually our career average is 509, so we're double the amount of our impact fees. Inventory by this time of year has usually sold 13 lots. This year they sold 54, so their growth is pretty consistent with what we're seeing across the district as well. So this is what's really generating that strong positive variance in revenue. And it doesn't seem to be slowing down. When I tell you July numbers, I think we'll even have a higher variance because it just seems to keep happening.
What's your question?
On this, probably the one thing, so the very top left box on the water consumption, I just want to point out that for 2021, our MRW customers use 336 acre feet. That's kind of highlighted in purple you'll see there. You look up a little bit in 2020, it was 322 acre feet. So that's where we actually saw more usage this year than last year. And I was maybe getting a little convoluted in my description, but basically we've had a little over 4% growth in customers from last year, but we've had about 8% growth in usage. So those balance out to where we've had that 4% net growth in usage by our high residential customers. Park City is taking a lot of water. We think they'll get really close to their allotted 2,900 acre feet this year as they are really relying on that Finn's plant right now. Some of the water is on pace to do their 1,100 acre feet. Capital budget. You'll see more movement of this in the coming months. June, we kind of focused on getting that engineering exam. Everybody was working on getting that Spring Creek project completed. That's done. The Kilby water line replacement will start up here pretty soon. I think we're actually starting in August, is what I've been told now. And then we have executed our 3 big purchases on for the equipment this year. We are waiting on delivery of one of the F-350. As you probably heard in the news, Ford is having trouble getting trucks off the assembly line and shipped out due to chips, computer chips not being abundant. So overall, the development-related collections is going to make this year seem really crazy when we calculate our debt ratio, and our income will be really high this year. So we will have funds to do the extent the some of our tank we need to do and all the other things on our impact fee facility plan. So we decided we need to do another one to handle all the other growth. So any questions?
A lot of head nods, Steve. I think everybody's happy.
My only comment, I don't really have a question. My comment is just, I appreciate that Steve pointed out that pretty much everybody's up, even though we've been working so hard to try to get people to go down 20% outdoor usage. So it really highlights what's in front of us next year if we have to do further restrictions.
I think creating effective change under a harder circumstance will be challenging.
Yep. Go ahead, Steve.
I'm very curious to see July usage numbers. I know Scott, you, everybody is, to just see if maybe finally all the messaging on the radio and TV and us, if we finally start to get a little bit of traction on, at least let's flatten this, let alone have it growing, and then we can maybe get to actually using less, but yeah.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
I think in September, when we go through some of these numbers, it'll be really interesting when we show you, the percentage of our customers that really do use that extreme amount of water that would be paying potentially the higher tiered rate. So there's a little bit of a teaser for you. It's not a huge percentage of our customers that would really be impacted from what we're seeing right now. Just be those really high users who, for lack of a better term, don't seem to really care how much they use or how much they pay.
That's awesome. Thanks, Steve.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah.
We tried to get a landscaping guy to come out and redo our meter, do it. It's going to take him 2 months to get out there because he's busy doing it everywhere else. So we did it ourselves, and our water usage went up by double.
It went up by double.
Yeah, we didn't know how to. So we just
turned it off.
We just turned it off.
Yeah. All right, Mike, do you want to lead us into the next?
Thanks, Steve. I think we're on 9 for Chris's update on a floating solar array.
I've been waiting for this all day.
So late in June, Brant from the treatment plant and I took a field trip to Walden, Colorado, across the barren eastern part of the state and into the smoky Colorado section. So Walden is just east and north of Steamboat.
Looks like the sun angle is about the same.
They're pretty darn close, yes. And similarities as well. They're in a big mountain valley. They're at about 8,000 feet, so they're 1,000 feet better than where we're proposing for us. Their record low temperature is negative 45 degrees, and they regularly see negative 20 during the winter. For extended periods, yeah. It's a cold place. It's only about 15 miles, 20 miles from the Wyoming border, and the cold just sinks out of this big valley. So we went there to check out this solar array. So you can see this is their treatment plant.
Chris, why are we interested in a solar array? What does it do for us?
To offset our usage of the treatment plant.
We're trying to go net zero on that.
Exactly. And
county goals.
Right. Yep. So as part of just broad brush, we're part of Summit County's new program. 2023, all of their electrical power essentially is going to be produced from an array out near Tooele. As part of all those calculations of the district demand, this project was contemplated as a likely future district project. So it was, it's all part of that larger county.
And it's supposed to cut down on evaporation, right?
Yes.
Well, and it's supposed to keep the panels cooler, right?
Panels cooler, and they actually plant growth down in the areas. That's one of the things actually that they have seen a tangible difference, because they have the one pond that is not covered and the one that is, and there's significantly less plant life growing in the one that's covered. As far as evaporation, it's not really something they can measure, right? It's, you know, these are pretty small ponds. But they've got a small membrane plant in here. They can treat up to about 500,000 gallons. And when we told them we could do upwards of 3 to 4, they were flabbergasted. Magnitudes of difference, right?
But you can do a back of the envelope calculation pretty quick, just taking a pan evap number and applying it to your surface area.
Yep. I mean,
if you're pressed, you should be able to come up with that.
Yeah, but you know, the waves and all the other stuff that happen up at the plant, you know, also affect all that. So yeah. So general information about the Walden array. It's been up for 2.5 years. It's been through 2 winters already. They use it as a net metering system, just like what we would with Rocky Mountain Power. That little array completely covers the electrical usage for their plant for the year. So it's sized high, so that they know that they're going to lose production during the winter months, just like we would due to snow and sun angle and so forth. The production's not the greatest, but overall, over the course of the year, they're basically a net zero return on their energy consumption from the meter. One of the biggest concerns from our ops crew and from me as well is also just maintenance. Like how much extra work is this for their, because they have. You think we have a shoestring budget? They have 2 guys that run their entire water system, and they don't do anything other than go out and take photos of the meter every day and look and make sure the panels are still flowing. That's about it. They don't clean them. They don't have to do anything with them. And you know, the panels, you'll see in the photos, the panels look fine. There's no problems with them. So scale, this is about a 65 kilowatt installation. You'll see that when we get to the next one, we're talking about almost 10 times that. So one of the differences there, they have 208 panels in their system. Each panel is 320 watts. Just efficiencies as you go forward with panel production, you're now talking about panels in the next year that are going to be at 430 watts per panel.
320 watts, how does that work, per hour? And constantly when the sun's on it?
Yes, that's their max production rate.
So they have some storage capacity somewhere else?
Well, no, it's immediately inverted back to AC power and put back onto the grid.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so that's maximum watts of power instantaneous, right?
Okay.
So we talked about the fact that they're at a slightly higher elevation and so forth, that they have the reduced plant life growth within their pond. So
which is a good thing.
Yeah, it helps with the treatment process. So here's an overview, kind of picture of their array. These sections here you can see are their anchoring points. So they're anchored directly to the shore. They've got a chain system in it. This pond is only about 6 feet deep. It's a bit shallower than ours. You can see how, so they don't have quite the wind effect that we would on our pond, but they still have some pretty significant drifting. They said that, and the drifting, the wind blows most of the snow off of the pond in the winter. Looking out in the other direction. So here, standing out on the array. So these are walkways between the panels, and this system right here. This is a blow up of that. This is actually what the panel gets mounted to.
What is that material?
It's just a polyethylene plastic, like a roto-molded piece. They haven't done any maintenance on these. They haven't had any of these. They can tell it have failed yet. And it would be a fairly simple process of just unbolting the piece, lifting it out, dropping a new one in if they had replacement issues with it. We were able to, both Brands and I were able to walk around on this without it, you know, completely submerging at all. I think that you'd probably be 250 weight limit on wandering around on the project.
Before your feet get wet.
Yeah, before you start, getting knee weight boots. So what we're talking about for our particular system, right, this is a proposal that Creative Energies had come up with in, out of Salt Lake back in 2019. So it's a little dated as far as the size and so forth because the efficiency of the panels has increased. But we're talking about 550 kilowatt system on the pond. So, and then another 50 kilowatt on the bridge. We're talking 600 kilowatt, which is essentially 10 times what that other system was based on. From an acreage standpoint, you can see it covers about 1.3 acres of the total pond area. And again, this is just a rough schematic of what that would cover on the pond. So the 2019 estimate, you can see, was 1,600 panels. By economies of production of the panels now being 430 watts, that's now reduced by 120 panels, and also by 120 floating pieces, so the panel the system can get smaller. We were talking about maybe getting rid of the roof-mounted pieces and just putting them back onto the water to simplify the installation components. That's all.
Is this photo, is it oriented so that you want to screen up?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yeah, Google North. So 2019, the cost was approximately $1.1 million total buy-in cost for this. We do not have updated numbers yet. Yeah, we haven't gotten to that point, but you know, from a ballparking point, that's where we're sort of starting at, right? Right now, we're working. We're looking at funding options from Rocky Mountain, what grants and so forth will be available through the Blue Sky program. They have a window that it's not currently open yet for applying for those grants. It typically opens later in the year. And then there's also different federal grants and federal funding that are possible also through the infrastructure stuff that Tim had mentioned earlier. So sort of our next step forward, you know, so we think we believe in this idea, right? You know, you guys have seen it, it's now the second time. And Tim had voiced some concerns that we were going sort of, you know, a couple years ago, going willy-nilly into it. And we've kind of done more of our due diligence. And we looked at this more. At the time when we had looked at it before, the floating system was not rated for our temperatures and our elevation. And now, because of the Walden installation, this particular manufacturer is out of France. Their floating component is now rated for elevation and temperature because of the Walden situation.
Which means we get a warranty.
Now we get a warranty with the product. So when Walden installed theirs, they opted to not take a warranty because they wanted to do the install and do it themselves. So they took the chance. And because they've taken the chance and installed it and it's been fine for 2 years, the company is now issuing warranties with that product.
Are the flotation units, are they filled with foam or are they air?
No, I mean just air. Yep, they're empty. One of the things that they had mentioned was when they said they assemble these things on the shore, and they put plywood down and they slide them off into the water in rows, essentially. And that was one of the things they had when they were doing the installation. They had one or two fail because of sliding the plywood. So the plastic is not very thick. And that was one of their comments was when you're doing the install, you want to make sure that the guys that are doing the install are very aware of sliding these things over. They use some sort of a film, some sort of another plastic polymer to help slide the flotation devices in and minimize the damage on. So I would imagine that they're just straight empty, not that there's nothing in it. So the next sort of piece of the process for us is to do an RFP, and looking kind of for the whole enchilada, right? With being able to have somebody help us with, you know, the technical solar side of stuff, the actual grant and funding process, and then actually also the array procurement and installation stuff. And talking with Scott, and he talked with Dave Thomas earlier today, they had said once we do this RFP that we'd be, you know, drafting some sort of an agreement that would allow us some off ramps along the way, so that we're not, you know, we're not pressed, you know, funding becomes available, we're not all of a sudden in a rush to try and
gain the rest of the funding or put in a bunch of money that we weren't planning on. Or that the cost comes in and it's gone exponential like everything else and it's just no longer feasible.
What's their estimated useful life of this thing?
So the panels are 30 plus years. The inverters are actually a shorter lifespan. They're probably 5 to 7 years on the actual electrical inverters that take the DC to AC. The floats, there's only, I want to say there's between 6 and 10 floating installations in the country. This would be the only one in Utah.
Yeah, 2 years ago, it was kind of hard to find one.
Yep.
And, as a result of it being potentially the first in Utah, we think that it's attractive from a grant perspective. So, the sales pitch from, the solar folks that we've talked to is that they think we can get fully funded. Well, let's get the RFP in place, let's start chasing funding and see where it comes in, and then we can make a decision. Yeah, that's the idea.
What's the dollar value of the 600 kilowatt of power that we can save?
So in 2019, we were spending $80,000 to $90,000 on electrical cost for treatment plant.
That's
not true. No, totally. Yeah. And the payoff, and at that point, they were talking with us, it was a little less than half is what we got to come up with. The payoff was 6 years.
They assumed, what, $700,000 in grants, and then they get $400,000 out of pocket in payoff.
So what's the likelihood of this thing being able to drag those filters?
Oh, say that again?
Don't you have to put the water in real high pressure through the filters in your system there?
Well, we go to the grid, so we're still pulling off the grid.
But if you get to net zero at some point, you say it have to equal whatever the power usage is. I guess you're saying throughout the entire day.
Correct. Throughout the entire year. It's net zero over the course of the entire year. There's times where the meter's going to spin backwards because we're producing more than we're consuming. And then when it's dark and we're still running the treatment plant, the meter's spinning the right way.
Well, luckily, it seems like the times of the year that we need the most water, like in July, we're probably able to create a ton of power, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Or in December, it's only like 5 hours anyway.
So that 600 kW is about 800 horsepower.
Sounds right. Yeah, 3.75 is up there.
Yeah, and so back to your pumps. You could run 800 horse there's. The power we burn is down at Lost Canyon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good stuff. Thanks for the update.
Yeah. Do you have any questions? Or?
I'll follow on to Mike's. Does that include the cost for the Lost Canyon pumps, or is that just for the treatment facility?
No, that's just for that.
That doesn't include the cost of the pumps.
It's just kind of a convenient place to put it, right? Yeah. It's got benefits.
Yeah. As the right aspect.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense to cover the whole pond because you can't go past net zero, right? You can't. They're not going to cut. Rocky Mountain's not going to cut your check for the extra power, so it doesn't. And it needs to be the net metering is in that location. You can't apply the extra that we do here to another meter.
So you can't count in Lost Canyon pumping.
Right. You would have to have a solar installation at Lost Canyon.
We're going to be drawing all that from the big array in the western part of the state, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because we don't have a lot of footprint in Lost Canyon.
No.
We just have the cabin and the pump station.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the only other feasible location where we could do it would be the Silver Creek tank, with the 2 million gallon tank we put in a few years ago, because that's a flat, wide site where we could put solar on top of that.
Well, it's going to make a good story.
I think it would be great PR. I really do. Talking about the net zero site and floating solar array.
You just won't let everyone come up and look at it, right?
Well, yeah. You have to do it. There would have to be tours. Some of the grant stuff that I've seen from Rocky Mountain for this kind of thing is that they want some PR rights to it. They want to be able to show people this stuff. So.
Okay. I think we're ready for 10.
Any update from you, Dave?
No.
All right.
Tom. department updates. Want to just go around the table here? Karen, did you have any?
No, I think this is all about the forest stuff. So, found it.
Okay, Ian?
Scott, I should know, but Tank 1 in Summit Park, is that the big one above the park view, the trailer?
It's the little white one that's on Crestview. The
above.
Yeah,
did we do anything with that large tank above the Matterhorn trailhead?
Did we do anything with it?
Do we use that tank at all?
Yeah, there's so the Summit Park water system design, all the fire storage is at the top, and there's some connections on that top tank, but very few.
Okay. And then there's a smaller tank that's above that, the green one that's further up the hill.
That's not
okay. That's the one that's out.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Are we going to take that down?
I think Basin Harbor owns that now.
Yes.
It's theirs. It's not ours.
No, it's not ours. It's not connected in any way to our system.
Awesome. Okay. The National Forest Service grant application.
Yeah.
That's for the stuff we were talking about earlier for wildfire mitigation.
Correct, yeah. Focused on the upper Weaver.
When will we find out on that?
I want to say October.
Because we were going to try to start doing stuff up there this year, like planning this year, then boots on the ground next year.
I signed an agreement with Utah State today to help to get some funding to them to get better field data. So, I mean, they're already actively doing research.
Yep.
That will flow into this project if it's funded, and regardless, it's going to be good information.
Okay. But that grant would enable the boots on the ground and doing some of the mitigation things based on research.
It would enable a much more full court press attention.
Okay. And then I have a question for Brian on the Silver Springs well number 3. The lost pipe that was shown on the video log, did we know that pipe was down there? Do we know when that pipe fell in the well, or was that new information?
So, Pico Silver Springs, you know, there was no documentation on what happened, but the operator at the time told me that they had lost everything down the hole. So we knew there was stuff down there. I think the amount of stuff is right where the pump is set at. So I think that's what we were seeing as the end of the pipe that was lost down the hole. They tried to fish it out back in the day, but they were unsuccessful.
And Brian, just to clarify, this is a well that has been that we've not used for a number of years, and we're trying to get back into service, right?
Yeah, we have not used it well for at least 10 years.
And you guys already started putting the pump back in. I think your notes said you were going to start on the 13th, maybe?
It's in. Pump's in.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, in advance, we're just kind of using the stuff electrically to get it running.
Okay. Have we ever fished stuff out of one of our wells? Do we have any experience there? I mean, some people have really good experience in fishing, and then a lot of people don't. So
I'm not sure. Ryan, do you have any experience there?
No, I know they tried it back in the day. We asked the person about it, and it's a specialty thing. They said, "We just could do it, but it could be anywhere from 25 to 50 grand to get that stuff out."
Yeah. And the wells, it seems like it's operated fine. So yeah, okay.
Yeah, in the past, it didn't need to run fine. You know, we got a consistent 100 gallons a minute out of it back in the day.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Brian. That's it.
You bet.
Yeah, Tim?
Joel.
Hi, Joel. I think we got him with the array. And well, I think we're good. Okay, well, do we have any other... I guess if we don't have any other questions, that's the end of our agenda, so we will stand adjourned at 8:26.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.